Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about anomalies, legends, and monsters. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove, and this is our second in the new series of episodes we're doing, which are interviews with people that are involved in the paranormal. This week's interview is with Stan Gordon, and obviously everyone knows Stan. He's been featured in more STM projects than any other single person. He's an established author, television personality, and researcher and investigator for over 60 years based on the Chestnut Ridge and around the Chestnut Ridge in Pennsylvania. This is a really cool episode. We think you guys are going to like it. Quick note, housekeeping related. If you want to send mail, monsteropolismail@gmail.com, we really want to get a bunch of mail in here so we can do a mailbag episode. So monsteropolismail@gmail.com. Don't forget, On the Trail of UFOs is now available on Amazon. If you have not yet seen On the Trail of UFOs, check it out on there or Vimeo On Demand. DVDs and Blu-rays are available at smalltownmonsters.com. We also really need reviews for On the Trail of UFOs. So if you watched it and you enjoyed it, please go on Amazon and leave us a glowing review. But in the meantime, check out this interview. Thanks for listening. So are you at least staying busy with like other stuff? Like what are you doing to stay busy?
There's all your stuff here. I've got a lot of reading to do. I'm working on my fourth book. I'm working on a new book. Mm-hmm. And all the other cases, I'm always getting calls in. I mean, I have reports in today. I'm getting reports in constantly. It never stops. Even during this, it's surprising.
Yeah. We're live, by the way, so I'm going ahead and recording this.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, but well, like what kind of reports are you getting with all the stuff going on?
Well, you know, going back a little bit, you know, when we talked before, yeah, we were having a lot of activity going on all through 2018, all through 2019. It actually continued into early of 2020, slowed down a little bit in January, probably because of the holidays, and then surprisingly, in the last week or so, I'm getting a number of different reports from different people of activity from early March, or the last few weeks. And so I guess some of these are people that are going out there and, you know, going out in the country and trying to get a little away from large crowds and hiking through the woods and whatever. So we're getting some reports of UFO sightings, some other strange reports, some footprints being found. So it's been kind of interesting for what's going on out there with all the virus scare around the area.
Yeah. Is it a lot of, like, nighttime reports or daytime or both?
It's both.
Okay.
And some of the reports are interesting. Of course, one thing we're getting a lot of calls on are the Starlink satellites going across the sky. And over the last few weeks, there have been a number of reports, you know, when the formations are passing over Pennsylvania, so we get a lot of calls coming in. But people are still out there reporting, seeing things. Some things we can explain, and some reports are more interesting.
Right. By the way, Mark Matsky is on this call. I didn't even say hi. Have Mark say hi. So.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Stan.
Good
how are you doing?
Again.
Yeah, same
good.
Here.
How have you been doing?
Oh, just going crazy a little bit, trying to shift a lot of things on the fly, but trying to just adjust to the new normal for right now, I guess.
I guess that's all any of us can do, that's for sure. Make sure you tell Andy I said hello.
I will definitely do that. That'll make his day.
That's it. Well, anyhow, like I said, I'm still getting a lot of reports. I get a lot of old reports all the time. You know, up to this point, I was doing many, many lectures, and everywhere I was going to, people were coming up to me and sharing with me things that they had experienced over the last several years. Some were many old reports, some were more recent reports, but I'd say 99% of these people never reported to anybody. And besides the reports that I get and other investigators that I'm in touch with who are getting reports, I don't think any of us can imagine how much of this phenomenon is ongoing all the time. We just never hear about. Yeah. It's so much that it goes unreported, and sometimes, you know, people report in, and sometimes people wait for months or years later before they report in. But the phenomenon is much more active than people realize.
Stan, before we get too deep into this too, I wanted to mention one thing. Maybe it's just the virus going around and all that stuff is making me sentimental. But I wanted to mention, I've said this to Mark before, but we genuinely consider you part of the family, like part of the family, part of the Small Town Monsters family. It's one of the reasons we always try to, anytime I can find an opportunity to get you involved in one of our projects, that's why we do it. We love getting to talk to you and hang out, and especially with this virus stuff going on, it has a calming effect on me getting to talk to you, and it's almost like hanging out with Mark. Like I get to hear from you and hear how you're doing, so I'm always excited about the, you know, the Bigfoots and the UFOs, but just as a person, you're one of my favorite people. So thanks for agreeing to be on with us too.
Well, I sure appreciate that, and I'm very proud to be a part of the Small Town Monster family. And I've got to know some of you guys pretty well over the years, and of course I see what kind of product you're able to produce. And as I've told you in a number of the films, and I hear so many comments, even the last few days from people who are watching Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, how much they really enjoyed that documentary. Mm-hmm. And the other ones are seeing more and more of on the trail of Bigfoot, and now on the trail of UFOs. And the quality is so good, and there's so much good information. It really helps to get the information out to the public to make them aware that we're dealing with ongoing phenomena. It's not something that just happens randomly or rarely. It goes on all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I know Mark shares my opinions on this, and Mark is the reason but when I really dove into your work, it was because Mark had pushed it in front of me so much. I was always aware of you, but Mark was the guiding Stan, always guiding me towards Stan Gordon's work. So big thanks to Mark as well.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm going to mention this right now because we have a question in the chat as well. The Walt Wadsworth wanted to know, the lights reported a few weeks ago across western Pennsylvania. Anything definite on what it was?
Well, there have been a number of them, but I think probably he might be referring to that massive number of reports came in on the evening of March the 5th around 8:10 p.m., I know there were multitudes. I was getting lots of phone reports, a lot of email reports, and it was positively it was a Starlink 3 that passed over the area. And this was a formation of, I think it was at least 30 of those very small little satellites, almost in a row, almost like a train going through the sky. And when the conditions are right, which they were that evening, it was nice and clear, you're able to see them with the naked eye. You don't need a telescope to see them, or binoculars, and these things have been passing over different times around the country, and every time they make a pass, if the conditions are clear, people are reporting in. But it very possibly is what he's referring to.
Mm-hmm. So I have a few questions here. I only put a few questions together because I know that we're all going to probably have our own lines of thought on stuff, and really it's easy to interview you because I can ask you a question and let you sort of expand on it. But the one thing I want to ask you at the top of the show, this is probably a better ending question than beginning, but nonetheless, I am curious if there is a case. How many years? First of all, how many years have you been looking into the paranormal subjects?
This year is 61 years, and surprisingly to many, many people out there, I've never personally seen a Bigfoot or UFO myself. I've seen a lot of evidence out in the field. I've interviewed thousands of people. I think I've been close to a Bigfoot, at least one situation back in 73 with a massive outbreak ongoing, but I've never had my own personal encounter.
In 61 years, is there a case, and I think you're going to say Kecksburg, but is there a case that you find yourself thinking about more than others, or going back to and you know, contemplating it, thinking about it? Is there a case that you kind of keep coming back to?
Well, my gosh, we could spend hours and hours talking about some of the amazing cases I've been involved with, and it's just incredible that some of the detailed close range reports I've had. And Kecksburg, yeah, I've been working on that since the day it happened, so I was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's a story in itself. But there are many, many, probably by the hundreds of cases I've worked on of large, solid, what appear to be solid metallic craft, very close to the ground, very detailed reports, sometimes where it was physical traces or physical effects and multiple witnesses. And those cases are amazing. But, of course, the one case that I'll never forget, and, of course, that's the case that we're mentioning, focused on the Silent Invasion book, which you covered in your film, Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. And, of course, that's the famous case that happened in Fayette County, October 25th, 1973, with the multiple witnesses seeing this large object dropping slowly from the sky and landing on the farm, and two Bigfoot in the field at the same time. And, of course, that was the case, among other cases that were going on at the time, but that was a particular case that was so well documented because my research team was on the scene soon after it happened, after the state police in Uniontown called my team up that night to investigate it. And that was the case that really opened our eyes to the fact that there is a lot more to the Bigfoot mystery than any of us had any idea about. It's much, much stranger. And the more I know about these cases, and it's ongoing, right through last year, some very significant strange cases, more and more people in the public reporting incidents that had that high strangeness effect. And let me tell you, I'm more and more convinced that there's more to this than just an unknown animal.
With that case, for instance, over the years, because I know this has happened with me, so I'm going to assume it's happened with you. With that particular case, have you had any additional information or corroboration or anything come up with that case in the years since it happened?
It's just the fact that, you know, a lot of people around there, of course, knew about it, and I can't remember exactly when, but it was a period of time after that event happened.
Yeah.
And I'm just going from memory now. I'd have to go look my notes up, but I received a communication from a family that lived only a short distance over the hill who also had a farm, and they mentioned that on that same night there was strange things going on around their property and affecting the cows on the property. I believe they were cows.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw an unusual light over the original farm that we talk about the same night this was going on their property as well, only a short distance away.
Interesting. So what about the two kids? Weren't there two boys that were with the man that was there that night? Weren't there two younger boys? Did you or anyone ever interview or find out any additional information about the two boys?
We interviewed all those people were interviewed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the famous psychiatrist who's now passed away, unfortunately, many of the people involved in that case are now gone. So many of the people in so many of these great cases have passed away. They're way up in age and they're forgetting things. But the well-known psychiatrist, Dr. Berthold Schwartz, he was a famous psychiatrist in New Jersey at the time. He came up here and spent a week investigating this case. And he interviewed all the people, and he went away completely convinced that these people are all telling the truth, that something definitely happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, yeah, the state trooper who was involved, who went to investigate the incident where the object was on the ground or inches above it, and the whole area was at the time when the object was there, was making this very loud whining noise, and the whole area was luminous. And of course, the short part of the story is when the man began to fire at this thing, shoot at the creatures, the object in the field suddenly stopped and vanished, just hovered, was hovering, and it vanished and disappeared. Mm-hmm. It didn't take off, it just vanished. So most of the luminosity was gone, the sound stopped, the creatures turned around, the two Bigfoot creatures turned around, started walking along the barbed wire fence back towards the woods. He's firing live ammo from a 30-06 into the creatures with no effect on them. And when the state trooper arrives, he tells me that when he got up to the area, the whole area where the object had been on the ground was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter. He said it was bright enough that if he had a newspaper, he could have read the newspaper from the light coming off the glow.
Did he have any ideas what would cause, did anyone have any theories on what could cause that, like beyond something like a UFO or something? Did anyone offer any ideas as to what could have caused that glow?
Well, at that time, there were so many things going on. I mean, first of all, we had our radiation equipment with us that night. There was all the radiation levels were normal. There was nothing abnormal about the radiation levels at the scene.
Yeah.
But, you know, there have been theories over the years, and there was another famous case, I believe it was Delphos, Kansas, back years ago, where there was also a UFO presence, and there was a luminous ring where the object had been on the ground. So there's more than one case where you've had this luminous phenomena after the object departed the area.
Hmm. Mark, you want to hop in?
Yeah. In reference to this case and other cases that you've covered, one thing that you've brought up that I think is really unique and it's really compelling as well is the reaction of animals to this strange phenomena. Like pets and even livestock in some cases are clearly reacting to the things that humans are reacting to. Can you comment on that a little bit more?
Sure, and this is something that I, of course, noticed years and years ago. I mean, I started seeing these cases back probably late 60s, early 70s. And there were many, many cases. And that, by the way, that's something I have observed. And I said years and years ago, you can fool people, but you can't fool the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And very commonly, and this is very common with Bigfoot reports in particular, even the most vicious dogs, when they're close proximity to these creatures, they're like paralyzed in fear. They shake, they cower, they hide, they don't make a sound. Sometimes they'll lay on the ground, their eyes will move around, they won't whimper, they won't make a sound at all. And sometimes they won't even eat right for 2 or 3 days later. That's something that's consistent with multitudes of reports. And it's also been seen in other farm animals, horses and cattle and cats. And I remember some cases, early cases back in the 70s, where people were saying they had very young babies in the house. And that particular night, those children were so upset and crying like they had never experienced ever before or since. And as though the children were able to perceive or realize there was something going on out there. So that's something interesting. And another thing that I noticed long ago, and this is still ongoing, and I have no doubt there's a connection, many low-level, close-range UFO encounters, and many encounters with not only Bigfoot, but other cryptids, commonly occur in the vicinity of high-energy sources. So multitudes of sightings around all gas lines and high-tension power lines and power plants and radio towers and, railroad tracks and reservoirs and things like that. No doubt whatsoever there's an energy connection to the phenomena we're dealing with.
Well, in that case, I should walk about a mile north of my house because there's railroad tracks and high-tension wires kind of crisscrossing each other. So maybe I should just go for a little hike, go out there with my my phone and record something. Because it's right. I mean, that's true. That's something that we touched on in Invasion, was that the whole the drawing of an energy source seems to be an ongoing issue. And even with things as like orbs and mystery lights and so forth, almost undoubtedly have some sort of energy, you know, reaction or relation to those things.
Right. Well, you know, up to this point with the virus, I was booked to speak at multitudes of events this year. And a lot of those, of course, have been canceled, and I wouldn't be out going to them anyhow at this point, the way the situation is. But anyhow, mm-hmm. one of the lectures I've done the last couple of years is called Strange Aspects of the Elusive Bigfoot. And it gets into a lot of the strange things that I've found out about Bigfoot that many people have never heard about. Many people have no idea that goes on. And some of the people in Bigfoot field are aware of it, but they're reluctant to even talk about it. My position has been since the time I was out in the field, this is what we're uncovering. This is what we're documenting. I don't have the answers. I'm putting it out for people just to get an idea of what's going on. You can believe it or not believe it. And over the years, and even again in recent years, there is more and more of these cases going on around the country and around the world. And I'm seeing an interesting response, I'd say in the last few years, from a lot of radio shows, radio interviews I do, that even many people in the Bigfoot field who were very skeptical before are beginning to ask the same questions. For example, where's the bodies? And they're getting these reports of strange elements that some of the Bigfoot cases are getting. And in recent years, and not only in Pennsylvania, but all over the country, numerous Bigfoot researchers are beginning to report when they're out in areas where there's a lot of history of Bigfoot activity, they're seeing orbs of light, strange light formations. That is something that's becoming more and more active in with many of these cases.
Totally changing the subject really quickly. We tend to talk a lot about Kecksburg, so I think that's like a pretty well-known case. But would you mind giving a rundown of what Kecksburg entailed for listeners? Because I do have a question regarding Kecksburg that I want to get to, but I want to set it up a little bit.
Okay. Well, as you know, we could talk for hours and hours about Kecksburg, but just a brief little summary. It's late afternoon, December 9th, 1965, Thursday afternoon, just getting dark in the Pittsburgh area. But how I heard about it was I was listening to one of the big radio stations here in Pittsburgh, KDK, that night, because they had a talk radio show called Contact, and the host of the show was Mike Levine, and he had a special guest, and I wanted to hear that special guest, who turned out to be Frank Edwards, that many people are familiar with, who was that journalist who had written some books on strange encounters, strange happenings. So I wanted to listen to see what he had to say. And more interesting, almost the entire radio program is breaking, it's covering breaking news on this brilliant fireball, this fiery object was seen from Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And what appears to be the same object passed over the greater Pittsburgh area about 4:47 p.m. There were multitudes of reports. The police department, fire, news media were all being deluged with reports. And as the evening continued on, the reports were coming in, they're reading the newswire, breaking news stories, they're interviewing witnesses. The report came in that whatever the object was, it apparently fell into a wooded ravine in Westmoreland County near the little village of Kecksburg. What made it even much more interesting, within a relatively short time, people reporting that military personnel and equipment were arriving in the area to search for an unidentified flying object. And there was so much we didn't know at that time. I'm documenting all this information that night as it's happening and keeping records of it. And then the next day, I mean, I run to the local newsstand. I'm hoping, gee, I hope this makes the news. And here it is in all the major Pittsburgh newspapers, front page headlines, made national news. Our local paper, the Greensburg Tribune Review, the morning edition had Army ropes off area, unidentified flying object falls near Kecksburg. And that story went on to say that apparently something did fall down into the woods, that the authorities were not letting anyone near the object, that there was a talk that maybe radiation was involved, that they are awaiting the arrival of civilian scientists and Army engineers to examine whatever it was. The later edition of the paper had a number of stories, including one, basically it said, searchers failed to find object. Goes on to say there was a search in the early morning hours, but they found absolutely nothing. And officially, they were saying it was a bright meteor in the sky. People had been mistaken. Nothing had fallen to the ground. And officially, that's where it stands today. Well, again, I began to try to track down people the next day, but there was very little information. But over a period of weeks and months and years, I began to receive a lot of input, some from people who were involved. Sometimes it was friends, neighbors, relatives of people who were involved, sometimes anonymous tips. So over the years, I tracked down hundreds and hundreds of people who were involved in the incident. Those included reporters who were there from all over the Pittsburgh area. So you had the main reporters from Pittsburgh radio and TV and newspapers on the scene who either saw the military activity or interacted with military people. So they became part of this big story. And there was so much to it that people never knew, and a lot that we didn't know at the time. But over the years, I found out that as this object came in over the city of Greensburg, where I live, made a turn to the south, was seen by many people in those little farming communities, as it moved out towards Norvelt, out past Mammoth, Norvelt, went over Kecksburg, went out to the mountains of Laurelville in the distance, apparently kind of stopped momentarily, kind of hovered and turned back, began to track back towards Kecksburg, made another turn, then went down to the Little Ravine. And the local people who saw it go down said it didn't come down at a high rate of speed. It came down almost like it made a controlled landing, but nobody ever reported any parachutes at the scene. And what I found out was that some of the local people, right after it fell, they ran down into the woods to see what fell. Some people thought it was an airplane crashing. And that's when they come across this large, metallic, acorn-shaped object semi-buried in the ground. So this thing is 10 to 12 feet in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter. It's like one solid piece of metal, like a big, hot gold-colored acorn. And one witness, who was a volunteer fireman, who was one of the first on one of the first search teams to come across the object, he was a machinist all of his life. And he said to me, he said, I never saw a colored metal like that before, but he said, it looked like somebody took a liquid metal and poured it into an acorn-shaped mold. It was seamless. No weld marks, no seams, no rivet marks. But on the raised-up back part of the object were what appeared to be some type of unusual symbols. And, of course, the interesting part of the story is the military came in. They loaded the object on the military flatbed tractor trailer. They covered it with a tarp, and during the early morning, they took it out of that area. And I was told in the summer of 1990, before we did the Unsolved Mysteries TV show on it, a man contacted me. I was able to check his records and credentials, and he said I was a member of the Air Force Police who guarded the object from Kecksburg, but it came into Lockbourne Air Force Base near Columbus, Ohio, during the early morning hours of next morning, December 10th. He said they backed that truck up with the object in a hangar. They set up a security perimeter around it, and they were given a shoot-to-kill order to anybody approach that hangar without the proper clearance. And then it stayed there only for a short time. It continued on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And later I was told exactly what building they took it to. Where it's at today, we don't know.
Do you? Someone asked in the chat, where do you think the acorn is today? So do you have any ideas or thoughts or theories on that?
We've heard theories and stories, no way to confirm it. We've heard it's still there. Mm-hmm. We've heard it's been moved to another base out of state. No way to confirm that. We don't know.
Right. Okay, so where because your theories and opinions on where on what the craft is have changed over time or evolved over time a little bit. And where do you stand on the origins of the craft today? Do you have any like particular theory you lean toward, or how do you feel about it now?
I still keep an open mind to all possibilities, but you know, so many of the secret programs, whether it's Soviet or U.S. or others from that time period, have been declassified. And the technology has changed so much. You've got to remember now, whatever this thing was, it's relatively big. It's moving quite slowly across the sky, according to many witnesses. It's making change in direction along its path. It makes a slow descent with no parachutes. And it's completely intact on the ground. It's large enough for a man to stand inside of. And there's, again, there have been multitudes of theories since the time it happened. And many theories are interesting, but a lot of them we already know just doesn't fit what I know. And there's still some details out there that I'm sure nobody else knows about that I'm still, hopefully someday, we'll be able to release. I go by confirmation. For many, many years, there were certain little details about this case that until I had enough independent confirmation, I wouldn't publicly talk about. One of those details was the fact that, one, there was not just one military flatbed tractor trailer at the scene. There were two. Another thing was, and it took me years and years to, there were number of independent people who confirmed this account, there was apparently one, maybe two military jets that were pursuing along the path of the object. So they're not right behind it, but they're soon following along the path where it was going. And, I mean, that's just an idea, but I need to have enough confirmation on certain things before I will come out and say it is. And there's some interesting things out there, and I keep an open mind to all possibilities. Could it still be some type of very secretive advanced man-made space program device? Possibly. Could it be extraterrestrial? I wouldn't eliminate that either. I think we need to keep, I don't know, there could be other possibilities too. I keep an open mind to all possibilities, and I know we don't have time to get into it today, and I've talked about this somewhat on my documentary that I did, Kex with the Untold Story, but I'm losing track of time now, but probably in about the last 25 years, there's some interesting independent reports from different people who are very reluctant to even talk about it, and I know there's other people out there that have similar information from what I've been learning, that there's indication that there was possibly someone or something inside of the object.
And Stan, there was, did you have an eyewitness or eyewitnesses describe some type of writing or what appeared to be some type of hieroglyphic or symbols on the outside of the craft or the object?
Yeah, well, that was on the back part. One witness calls it the bumper area, the back of the acorn, the raised part like you see on an acorn. And some of these people, like this one person, he was only a few feet away from it. I mean, these people could have touched it, but they realized whatever they're seeing, they're looking for a downed aircraft. This was no aircraft. They had never seen like it before, and they weren't about to touch it. And this one witness, luckily, because of his background, he was familiar with Cyrillic or Russian, of course Soviet at the time, and he said, that is not what it was.
Hmm.
And from his memory, he remembered looking at these different symbols. And over the years, he went to libraries and read books on ancient writings and ancient language, and he said the closest thing he could recall, it looked similar to ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Are there any other cases that you know of where that detail was complementary? Like there were other objects or crafts that had something similar to that on them?
Well, there's a number of cases historically. I mean, go back to Roswell, I believe, Aztec, different ones. People have described certain types of unusual insignias or some type of symbols on them. The problem is, and unfortunately, with Kecksburg, these people are going by memory. People at the time, they weren't studying these things. They just saw them. They just had a glance at them. And they didn't write them down, and it was years later they tried to remember. So we don't know for certain exactly what they were, what order they're in, so we can't verify that.
The part of the story that gets left out a lot that I'm super fascinated by, probably just from a filmmaking standpoint, is the documentary that was being produced around the same time, or not the same time, but following the craft by the guy that worked at the radio station. Can you talk about that a little?
Well, he was doing a radio documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was John Murphy. John Murphy was a news director at WHJB. And John was apparently the first newsman on the scene. He was out on another news call at the time, and he got a report that go out to Route 30 East. There was some kind of explosion in the sky. So that would be out Route 30 East, right in the air where the object kind of would have made a turn down to the south. And he went out there, and apparently he saw nothing. He went into the station. He was getting ready to do the evening news report, and the phones are ringing off the hook. So numerous people are now calling the station report seeing this object, and they were just being overwhelmed for hours with phone calls coming in. So anyhow, it was, I believe, right after the news, right around the end of the news time, when a call came into the station. He was given the call, and this was a witness who wanted to call in to say that her son had seen, had told her they had seen the object out of the corner of his eye dropping from the sky into the woods not far from where they lived, which was not that far from Kecksburg, basically within walking distance. And she looked outside and saw the dark column of bluish-gray smoke rising up above the woods that had dissipated very quickly. So she gave all information to John Murphy. He called the state police barracks in Greensboro to give him the information, and he headed out to Kecksburg. And as I go into great detail about this in my documentary, and I was in touch I mean, over the years, again, there was so much I didn't know, and it was a period of time so I could find a lot of these people and track the information down, because there was so much I learned that I didn't know myself at the time. And I interviewed a lot of people who were very close to him, people who worked with him at the radio station, and apparently what I was told was he was in radio contact with various people, and I know about that. I know for sure they were in radio contact. And anyhow, he was down, he got down to the site about an hour before the state police fire marshal, another investigator, arrived on the scene. So they never knew, and he never told them. He had already been down in the woods. And apparently, what I was told was he was down in the woods. He came up, he radioed in, that he saw the object embedded in the ground. It was shaped like a big acorn with strange markings on it, and he took pictures. And, again, it's a long, long story. I'm just going by memory here. But anyhow, I later talked to at least, I can think of one, I think it was possibly two people who told me they saw the black and white pictures of this object in down in the trees that he had showed them. And anyhow, as he's accumulating information, he decides he's going to do this radio special called Object in the Woods. And you got to remember, back in those days, now they use real-to-real audio tape. And anyhow, the interesting part of the story, as a lot of people still talk about today, and different people who were there at the time confirmed the story to me independently. They were there when apparently these government in suits came in. They asked for John Murphy. They went into one of the separate studio rooms. And when they left, they said he was physically very, very shook up, very, very upset. He had told one of the managers that they had confiscated a lot of the voice interviews he had done with witnesses about the show he was going to do. So anyhow, they end up airing it. It was aired in a censored fashion. There was long beeps and pauses in the program, but it was aired. And it was apparently soon, right around that time, soon after, the people close to him told me he suddenly just dropped everything. He didn't want to talk about it anymore. I mean, this was a huge, huge national story. It's probably his biggest story. He was documenting everything. His pictures disappeared. All the notes he was keeping disappeared. His wife said all that stuff vanished. And he just got to play. He just didn't want to talk about it anymore. And everybody said there's no doubt that, you know, something affected him that he no longer wanted to talk about the case. It was his biggest story. Mm-hmm. And so that's about it. It's an interesting facet dealing with that particular incident.
Am I mistaken, or do you have like a copy of that radio documentary somewhere?
A lot of my stuff was packed away, and unfortunately, years ago, we had a big flood in this area. Mm-hmm. Some things were destroyed. We had massive flooding all through this area, and I lost some things, so I have no idea at this point where any of that stuff is.
Yeah. That's crazy. I'd killed it. That's like one of those things I'd killed it to hear. Like you'd just love to be able to listen to that. So what area is there a particular area? I mean, obviously I've been there and we've been all over the Chestnut Ridge, although I feel like we've still barely scratched the surface of the area. But on the ridge, you've got all these little towns and locations that are hot spots, you know, like almost micro hot spots within a bigger hot spot, which is the ridge itself. Do you have a particular location you think of as being more active along the ridge than other areas, or no? Is it to you, it's all like one big hot spot?
No, I mean, you get sporadic reports all along the ridges, but the area that is most active is along the Derry side of the ridge in Westmoreland County, which you spent time out there.
Yeah.
That's an area that, at least going back to, geez, at least early 60s for me, and continuing right up through actually the last couple weeks, it's ongoing activity every year. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots. It's one of the most active areas in the country for Bigfoot sightings all through that area. Why? Who knows? Daylight sightings, nighttime sightings. I mean, it's just weird phenomena. And a lot of UFO activity. And, you know, we had that really intriguing UFO sighting last year. Mm-hmm. On the Youngstown side of the ridge, so that's on Route 30, and that's only a couple miles from Latrobe, and then right after Latrobe, you got Derry, and that whole area where you can see the ridge from there, when you go down Route 30, you're going right near the ridge, and you'll go through a part of it as you go travel down Route 30. But a lot of the activity, not just along the ridge, but historically, and again, even in recent weeks, a lot of activity from the Chestnut Ridge over to the Laurel Ridge. So then you're moving a little further down and up the mountain.
Yeah.
And those areas are just active year after year. I mean, what really interesting UFO incident was June 4th of last year, 2019, on the Youngstown side of the ridge. And there were two people riding in a car. The passenger noticed something first. Passenger yells to the driver to look up in the sky, trying to describe this round glass tube cylinder with something like smoke around it attached to a V-shaped object hovering in the sky. So the guy pulls the vehicle over, and he's sitting there, and they can't believe what they're seeing. Here's this very large, big V-shaped object, about 40 feet long, made up of about 50 rectangular small lights, like five rows on each side. There were four other larger, round-colored spheres of light above them. I believe one was orange, red, blue, and green. There was another light above it that had a big, like a beam of light that was moving across the sky, and this thing's hovering there making no sound. I mean, they stopped the car, they're listening, the radio's off in the car, the window's down, and they can't believe here's this huge thing hovering close by, and there's no sound to it. And then it got stranger. He began to have problems with his cell phone signal, and an odd clicking sound began inside of the car, and they noticed that the dash lights were alternating with that clicking sound. So they became unnerved, and in a couple of minutes, they decided to go down the road. As they're riding down the road, within seconds, animals are running out of the woods in front of their car, like they're being scared and rushing out of the woods. So there's deer coming out of the woods, and one deer just stopped there and looked right at them like it was dazed. And then a big bird hit the window, then more deer. And the animal reaction there was very, very intriguing. And you have those electromagnetic effects that we used to hear about historically for years from some UFO cases.
We just got an interesting question in the chat. Was the Portage County UFO chase, was the craft, do you know the case I'm talking about, Stan? I'm sure you do. Was that craft, would that craft have been heading in the direction of the ridge?
No. So what I'm thinking, I'm looking at my memory is, April 17th, 1966.
Yeah.
I believe that's what it was.
That's it.
And there were numerous police departments from Ohio in towards the Pittsburgh area.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been on the other side. That would have been out towards Allegheny County, that general area, bordering into from Ohio into that outside of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting question, though. I'd never really thought of that. Mark, did you? Oh, I know. I wanted to get in here real quick. What is like one of the more recent Bigfoot cases that came to your attention that you thought was more intriguing that you might be able to tell us about? Something recent.
Okay, I'm just thinking here. Hold on a second. I have pages and pages by the hundreds of reports for the last few years,
mm-hmm.
and let me think a minute. Okay, October of 2018, this would have been below on the dairy side of the ridge, but below it. And it's a rainy, rainy night. This guy's riding down the road, about 75 feet in front of him. Suddenly, he can see this outline of this very broad-shouldered creature, kind of stooped over like it has bad posture. And he's looking at this thing, but it's not solid. It's misty, like foggy, misty, but you can see the whole shape. Strange enough, it's not even walking. It appears to be gliding or floating right above the road into the field and disappears. 2 weeks later, beautiful morning, and this is only a short distance away, but on top of the ridge along the tree line, so you have this person who is walking along the tree line and is very, very much used to that area, is very familiar with bear. And it's about 11:30 in the morning. See, here's a strange knock, something against the trees. Here's some kind of noise. Walks into the woods, and about 20 feet away, here's this very large tree trunk. And right there next to the tree trunk is this about 7 foot tall, huge, shaggy, hair-covered creature with its arms completely wrapped around the tree, like trying to blend in with it, like it's trying to camouflage itself from her seeing it. It had its cheek against the tree. In this case, had very dark, large eyes staring directly at her.
Hmm.
And she stood there for a few seconds and ran to a tree about 10 feet away to try to get her composure, and to load up her camera to take a picture. She runs back to take a picture, and it's gone. She never heard anything coming. She never heard anything going. And this is what we're getting with more and more of these kind of reports. And then I tell you, I have a really significant Bigfoot sighting with another interesting element to it. So this was in November of 2018. Now, this is outside of Pittsburgh, down in the Mon Valley, along the Monongahela River, all these little small communities. Lots of history of Bigfoot and other cryptid encounters down to Thunderbirds even last year. All kind of creature sightings, Bigfoot sightings, creatures in the river. I mean, weird things. I wrote about that in my last book, Astonishing Encounters. And but anyhow, so here's a fella. It's a dark night. It's a two-lane farm road. And it's cold and very rainy that night. And he's riding down the road. And then he had his low beams on at the time. But he notices about 50 feet away, there's something standing on the left side of the road. He slowly moves closer and puts his high beams on, and this about seven and a half foot tall, huge, hairy Bigfoot just walks out right onto the road, stops literally 5 feet in front of his car, has luminous, glowing red eyes, and staring right into his face. And it was so close at that point that he couldn't see the legs because it was so close. It turns, and it starts running off, taking very long strides as it leaps across the road from left to right. Then you can see its long arms swinging as it ran. The hands were in a closed position, or like in the cuff position. And he said he followed this thing up a little embankment. He's right behind it. He's loading his camera up to take a picture, even though it's very dark, but you can see in front of him. He goes to take a picture, and he said, "It's gone." He said, "I don't understand. It was big, it was dark, it was in my headlights, but it's just not there anymore." He had no idea how this thing could vanish so quickly. And but, I mean, this guy, I was down there the next morning. Eric and I were down there the next morning interviewing him. The place was completely over. It was covered with wet leaves. It rained all night with no tracks. But this guy, I mean, this poor guy was just very, very emotional. But he described this thing from head to toe.
Hmm.
And, I mean, it was one of the most detailed reports I've heard of a Bigfoot sighting in years. And, I mean, great detail. I mean, right down to the face, right down to the hands, the hair. It was an amazing detailed report. But we keep getting these amazing reports. And these are just examples of some reports I'm getting. We had another case outside of Pittsburgh. This would have been in May of last year. And this was early morning. Guy lives in a rural area. Happened to look out his back window. And here's a small Bigfoot around five and a half feet tall. He's watching it walk across his yard to the edge of the woods. It enters a particular area of the woods. Seconds later, this small, luminous ball of light appears. It moves a little bit. It goes out. It reappears. It projects a long beam of light from it. It disappears, and it's gone. So here again, you keep getting these reports of these little orbs of light or other light phenomena associated with Bigfoot sightings. And that's, again, just an example of some of the cases that are coming in.
Wow. You know, what's fascinating about the Ridge is, you know, you've got all of these UFO reports and all these Bigfoot cases and eyewitness reports that you've gotten. And there's still weirder stuff that crosses your desk, Stan. I think the last time that we were together, you were telling me about kind of this stick figure creature. Can you talk about that, or have there been more reports of this? Is it like a stick figure or a headless figure, or am I melding two things together? Or
you're close. And
okay,
recent months it's quieted down a little, but I'm hearing reports something somewhat similar to other states. But this all began with a report I received actually from a police officer on patrol. And I'll just say Western Pennsylvania. And he's riding down this rural area that he commonly patrols, and he sees what appears to be a ball of light on the ground. And he's thinking, "I don't remember seeing any artificial lighting like that." So he stops his patrol car, and he's watching, and suddenly this ball of light rises from the ground. And he realizes that what he's seeing is actually, it's the head of a creature, of a humanoid, very skinny, very sickly-looking humanoid creature, about six and a half feet tall, and it's illuminating the upper part of the body of this creature. He said it was skeletal thin. He said it appeared at first to be lying on its body on the ground with its head facing the road. It then stood up, and he could see the glow from the head. And he said the creature turned to the right. The dull illumination from the head lit up the shoulders and the upper part of the body. And he said, I couldn't tell what happened, but he said, I've never seen it move so fast in my life. He said, it was there and it was gone. Same thing, and other people described me the same way, how these things suddenly appear and disappear. He said, I assumed it ran, but I couldn't see its legs at that point. And he said, I've never seen it move so fast in my life. It was just faster than anything I've ever seen. It was there and was gone. And he said this thing was 6 feet tall, 6 feet or taller. Head was about 8 to 10 inches diameter, shaped like a ball. But he said the head, which was a ball of light, could have been more of egg-shaped as well. The light emitted seemed to be a dull white, illuminated the shoulders, the top of the chest, and the section of the arms. Witness could not see the hands. Chest looked to be about 18 inches across. The waist appeared to be small, and the arms were unusually long. And the long limbs also looked skeletal with no muscle mass. The skin tone of the body appeared to be dull grayish-bluish. And so anyhow, after the creature left, he pulled his patrol car up, shined the light on it, no tracks. I think it was a couple weeks later, I'm going by memory, and I don't have all these reports in front of me, that I got another report, I'm guessing now, 10, 20 miles away from another person who knew nothing about this, was walking in a wooded area, and the similar thing came out of the woods and came within 30 feet of that person. Other reports from other counties came in over the last few years. I interviewed a guy, and I saw the location where it happened. And this occurred, let me think, in the fall of 2018. And this is 30, 40 miles outside of Pittsburgh in a rural area, not on the ridge. And this guy lives in the woods, homes in the woods, loves the woods. He was up in the woods when he heard these unusual sounds. He knows deer. These were not deer track sounds. And he went down to his house because he was unsure what this was, was sitting there in the kitchen eating something. 10 feet away is his big back door, no obstruction, nothing, no curtains or anything on it. And here's this creature, just like the policeman described, tall, skinny, skeletal thing, crouched down with glowing yellow eyes looking right to his face. And he said it went down on all fours and crouched around the house and was gone. And I mean, the last time I talked to him was months later. He still wouldn't go back in the woods. And there have been other similar reports coming in. Sometimes nothing glowing, sometimes a glowing head, sometimes a glowing eyes. And very similar reports. So once again, here you have this other strange creature that people are reporting from various areas, people who don't know each other. And these people are getting nothing out of it because nobody wants their publicity. So it's another very interesting cryptid report.
We had two questions come in that kind of coincide. One from David Otto. Do you think there's a reason why Southwest Pennsylvania is a hot spot for crypto activity? And then someone else chimed in on that and asked, is any of this interdimensional? Is Western Pennsylvania a thin space?
Well, again, if you read my Solid Invasion book, which goes about the massive UFO Bigfoot wave in the 73 and 74, when we uncovered some of the strangest cases ever documented, and many since then, my latest book, The Astonishing Encounters, goes into all kind of creature sightings. They are available on Amazon, by the way, but they go into great detail. And yes, the more and more evidence I'm seeing, for lack of a better term, and reluctant I say it all the time as I am to say it, more and more data suggests we're dealing with something that may well be interdimensional. It has a physical and a non-physical component to it. That's why there's no bodies, but so many people are seeing these things.
That does it on my end for questions. I don't know where Mark's at here. All right, so we're good. I have one final note I want to end on, and I don't want it to get too deep or anything, but so you've been in this for 61 years. If you had a do-over, if you could go back to when you were a kid, because you've put a lot of time and money and resources and energy, and I've seen like the energy you put into not just investigations, but like everything you do, you're very passionate about the subject, and you put a lot of yourself into all this? If you had a do-over, would you get into all this stuff again?
Well, that's something I'd have to really sit there and think about that clearly. You know, when I started this when I was a 10-year-old child, I never had any idea that I would spend my lifetime doing this type of thing. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. It was about all circumstances that happened. You know, Dr. Schwartz used to call it synchronicity. There's no such thing as a coincidence. Everything happens for a purpose, and who knows? I don't know what the purpose was, but I've been doing it forever. And, you know, I still hope that maybe someday the phone will ring and I'll get that one call that'll be the case that once of all gives us the evidence and proof that we're dealing with something we just don't have an answer for.
Yeah. Well, Stan, thanks so much for taking time for us tonight, and it was awesome getting to talk to you again and catch up, and hopefully we'll be able to see you at some point here this year, hopefully fairly soon, with everything going on, you never know, but hopefully we'll all be able to catch up face to face at some point soon.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, I hope to see you guys hopefully later this year or sometime in the near future. So you guys be careful and safe out there.
Yeah, thanks, Stan. You too. Yeah,
you too. Thanks, Stan.
All right, have a good evening. Thank you.
Yep.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.